You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and today we're doing something a little different. Every week, I show up on my friend Pat Kreitlow's morning show to talk about politics and healthcare and pretty much whatever we come up with. I'm answering his questions, but today, revenge is mine. Oh, no. Pat Kreitlow is a former Wisconsin state senator, and he is a broadcaster, which means that he's seen politics from the inside, and he's made a career out of asking politicians uncomfortable questions. So naturally, I'm going to make him squirm a little bit. And he's not usually in the hot seat, so this is going to be fun. We're going to talk about his journey from Anchorman to the Senate floor, to the radio studio. And we're gonna dig into what's really happening in Wisconsin politics, which is never a dull moment. We'll also talk about whether local media can survive in this current clickbait, TikTok, digital environment. And most importantly, we're gonna ask the burning question, can you have too many plaid shirts? And if so, how do you choose? The days of the suit are disappearing in media and politics, and nobody knows it better than Pat Kreitlow. Welcome, my friend.
Hello. Hello. This is, I feel like I'm about to be interrogated in the most uncomfortably wonderful way. Thank you.
Well, I am super grateful to you for showing up. You're babysitting right now your grandkids.
No, it's not babysitting when it's your grandkids. I mean, it's babysitting for free, you know, when it's your grandkids. But yeah, we're out here in Michigan as we're doing this. And I really appreciate taking a time away from Bear in the Big Blue House or whatever we're watching on Netflix these days. But it's always nice on the weekends to get a dose of littles, as we call the six-year-old and the three-year-old, mm-hmm. and away from the news. So, you know, that's always nice on the weekends. Got to do that now and then.
It is. You need that brain cleanse, that like touch grass is what Gen Z would say.
Yes. Yes. It's for the same reason that I tell people one of the more surprising things is that I wrap up my day, Sherry and I, my wife, we wrap up our day watching TMZ, which is really weird for people in their early 60s, especially since we don't know half to two-thirds of the celebrities they talk about. And that's the whole reason why. We just have to turn our brains off and watch somebody else enjoy life for a little while.
That's a guilty pleasure for me, too. I used to be the People magazine person when you'd be waiting somewhere in a waiting room and the People magazine would be sitting there. I just could not help grabbing it and paging through it. TMZ is the 2025 version of that.
It is. And for me, it takes me back to all those years working in a TV newsroom when, you know, for folks who have seen TMZ, our newsroom is a lot like that. We'd have a 2 o'clock story meeting every afternoon with all these people pitching their stories. And there was a lot of banter back and forth and a lot of laughter. And then in the end, you would get a newscast product out of the whole thing. So there's a little bit of nostalgia in there, too.
So let's go back to your news days, because you have been interested in news and politics kind of from the beginning. Which do you think came first in your mind and which came first in your career?
What a chicken and egg question that is. And I'm going to answer it by saying, first off, I've been able to do all of the things that I have chased after. I'm a very lucky person. From my very earliest age, I was a bit of a news junkie. What I first remember was, you know, Nixon winning 49 states in 1972, Watergate and Vietnam in 1973 and 74, watching Walter Cronkite every evening, watching my local anchor, Dave Moore on WCCO, listening to people on the radio and wanting to be like all of those people, wanting to be like Hubert Humphrey, who is the, you know, the politician that they covered the most at that time. And I've been able to do all of that. I've been able to be a TV anchor. I've been able to be in the legislature. I was a page in the Minnesota legislature. I was an intern in middle school because they needed to get me out of the classroom to do something. And so I would take a city bus every Thursday across from one side of St. Paul to the other on my own and you know, work at my state legislator's office. And so I knew from an early age how much state legislatures matter and radio and TV newsrooms. And so I feel so happy. I don't say privileged. I worked my butt off, you know, but happy to have been able to do so many things. And now I get to play on the radio with my friends. So I'm a very lucky person that way.
So how did you end up in journalism and not in politics?
Oh, that's a good question. This all comes back to a conversation my freshman year at UW-Eau Claire. And I did not know at that time if I wanted to major in political science or journalism. And they assign you an advisor, and my advisor was the chair of the political science department at the time, a fellow named Thomas Barth, if I get the name right here. And he sat down with me and asked me all kinds of questions. And at the end of it, he said, this will sound weird coming from the chair of the political science department, but I think you need to pursue journalism because you are very fixated on talking about both sides of a question and getting all sides, and that's what journalists do. Politics is a bit more one-sided. You're trying to sell somebody on your position, and it sounds more like it's journalism that you're interested in pursuing. And he was right. I did that with Henry Lippold, the legendary journalism professor, as my mentor then, and did all of the radio and TV things that I wanted to do. And then many, many years later, shortly after the 2004 election, in fact, when I watched John Kerry get swift voted, I said, well, wait a minute. Maybe we need people in politics who want to see both sides of an issue and who want to relay that to other people. And so that's when I had my midlife crisis and left a perfectly good job as 6 and 10 o'clock anchor at Channel 13, left the station after nearly 10 years simply to run for a seat in the legislature. And so that's what made the jump to what was then 4 years in the legislature and everything since then.
You saw this coming. Two decades ago, you saw this divisiveness and the need for somebody who could see both sides. And you ran for office to be part of that solution. But politics has clearly taken a different turn.
Oh, my goodness. It changed so much with I used 2008 as kind of the fault line. It was the election of Barack Obama. It was a big year for Democrats. I'd been elected to the legislature in 2006. And the 2009-2010 years were the start of the Great Recession, the heart of it, and the Tea Party movement. And as much as we tried to help people connect the dots that the Great Recession was by and large the work of a lot of people who the Tea Party are now trying to put back into office, that message didn't carry. We were the ones in charge only for a year and a half, I hasten to add. And suddenly the Tea Party momentum was gone in that direction, and Scott Walker got elected and Ron Johnson got elected, and we've been in a weird, weird place ever since.
Well, this was a flashpoint in Wisconsin history, and you were there at the heart of it. So what do you think, having been there in 2010, when Wisconsin when this progressive state took a completely different turn, and that turn kind of predicted what happened across the country. What at that time are you most proud of? And conversely, where do you think we really missed the boat?
Well, what I'm most proud of is that unlike I think a lot of politicians and campaigners out there, I can sleep at night. Mm-hmm. I never had to resort to, extreme positions or selling my soul or, however you want to phrase it. I just stayed true to me and to what I thought was the right way to campaign. And, it fell short. You accept that. You accept the verdict of the voters and you move on. So I feel like I did it the right way, even though, again, it meant losing to something that I found to be antithetical to most Wisconsin values. And so when you look at the other side of that equation and say, is there anything that you regret? I guess there are ways I could have, how do I put this, fought harder, but without, but without selling myself out, just in ways that I guess maybe I put a little, my wife will say that sometimes I was a little too naive and saying, well, people will hear this ridiculousness coming from a guy like Ron Johnson and they'll see through it. And then later it was Donald Trump. And it turns out they don't. And so I learned something very important about communications in this era in politics versus what I learned in media. And this part is very important, repetition. Mm-hmm. As a reporter and as an anchor, basically you did a story one time, you read it one time, it published one time, and that was it. You moved on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And I then learned that as a candidate and as an elected official, you have to say the same thing over and over and over and over again. And it's only when you're sick of hearing yourself say it, like let's say how trickle-down economics doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You have to say that so many times before some people go, hey, you know, I don't think this trickle-down economics thing is working.
Yeah.
You have to find your message and you have to just reinforce it over and over again. I feel so fortunate to have a radio show now where I'm sure some people say, gosh, he's being kind of redundant, but a whole lot of other people don't catch it. And it isn't until later on that they go, hey, you know what? I think I'm the one paying for these tariffs. Mm-hmm. I don't think these are really helping our farmers at all. And other examples like that. So my regret was that I didn't learn that lesson soon enough.
And it's such a fine balance, because when you talk about trickle-down economics, like that's a slogan. And you can seed that in people's heads with that repetition. But how do you then provide the context in a way where people will understand and will really get how it's affecting them? And that, to me, is the hard piece. Because, you know, as a physician and as somebody who wants to have these conversations, it's not just punchy slogans. It is really, truly a conversation. But do we have the mental bandwidth to be able to do that right now?
No. That is completely the key to all of this. And we've known this for a long, long time. We've known that progressive values don't fit on a bumper sticker. Mm-hmm. Populism, conservatism, extremism fits on a bumper sticker. And, you know, death panels, you know, for example, when they were talking about Obamacare, as opposed to, well, you know, there are these shades of gray when people are facing terminal illnesses, blah, blah. You don't have time to explain all that. If you don't get to the point right away, you know, like death panels or something like that, or, you know, make government smaller. Later on, people go, hey, wait a minute. Why did they cut my program? Well, because you wanted government smaller and I couldn't fit all that on a bumper sticker.
Right. This was coming.
And that is still the challenge.
Project 2025 is out there. The whole book is there, but we haven't been able to message it effectively. Okay. One more question before we go to break, because I want to definitely talk about media much more later in the episode. But you then ran for Congress and you got beat by a TV reality star.
Yes.
Yeah. What?
I will always thank God for John Lovitz playing Michael Dukakis in that famous Saturday Night Live sketch where George W. Bush, is played by Dana Carvey, is talking about 1,000 points of light and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And they cut away to Dukakis as John Lovitz and he just says, I can't believe I'm losing to this guy. And that has played in my head over and over again as I tried to help people see what Sean Duffy and the Republican Party were really standing for. And in a year where Tammy Baldwin was elected to the Senate that year in 2012, Barack Obama was reelected in 2012, and I lost to Sean Duffy, though I will say in all of the races since up here in the 7th Congressional District, nobody has come closer than I did. And so I'm proud of that, but it is a clear indication that there is still work to do communicating to rural and northern Wisconsin. And so that makes me happy to have started Up North News and this radio show to do exactly that.
And you do. Friends, I am talking with Pat Kreitlow. He is the host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on Civic Media and the founding editor of Up North News. He's also a former Wisconsin state senator. When we come back from this little break, let's dig in on Wisconsin politics, an increasingly hot topic as the midterms are approaching, and maybe a little bit about the governor's seat. That's fun stuff. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Langerly Show, streaming on the Civic Media app and all across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with my friend Pat Kreitlow. He is the host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on Civic Media, and he's the founding editor of Up North News. He's also a former Wisconsin state senator. Pat, we talked in the last little bit about your background in news and politics. You've seen Wisconsin politics from the inside, and you cover it every day on the air. So what's your diagnosis for Wisconsin politics? What is the state of our state?
I think we are very much, there's a reason we're a bellwether. There's a reason we're a purple state, is that we are very reflective of what's happening throughout the country. It's just that a lot of places in the country are deep red or deep blue. Mm-hmm. And so they don't see the division in quite the same way that we do, or we almost literally see it neighbor to neighbor around here. You know, you go to Madison, for example, and somebody might have one Republican friend on their block, maybe. Whereas, you know, we've got a lot of 50-50 mixes here in Wisconsin, and especially in greater Wisconsin. And so we see close up the way that people get their news and information in different ways. And it's a little befuddling sometimes, the things that they've learned. And so when you get to the state of Wisconsin politics these days, so much of it is informed by how we're informed. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the reason why I so wanted to start something like Up North News and or have a statewide radio show, because for years, again, for some 20 some years, I've seen the need for, you know, fact-based information sources, but that were right out there as a little bit left of center, knowing, look, we have progressive values, but here's some actual information that you can use, and hopefully it turns you into a voter that feels empowered rather than overwhelmed. You know this. We have so many people who do want to vote, but they feel so overwhelmed. And it's so much easier to hear the last campaign ad or, you know, the last person that you talk to, because you just don't know what you can trust for media sources. And I feel like, you know, part of what's going to help with the diagnosis of Wisconsin politics are some media sources that are more direct, that are more candid, but are still actually rooted in reality.
So what do you think right now? You know, we're approaching the holiday season. People have been barraged with all this federal information. It's really hard to know what's going on in your neighborhood. What do you think is that one story in Wisconsin that people are really missing out on right now?
Yes, this one's a little bit inside here, but I think what some people are missing is that there is the potential for a sea change in what is happening in politics coming in 2026, because they just hear the midterms and mm-hmm. they don't realize that there are still some close congressional districts in this state compared to other states. They really don't know that because of new, fairer maps for the legislature, we now have in several state Senate districts seats that are now in play that mm-hmm. weren't for the 15 years prior because of gerrymandered maps. And so I really want to help people understand the difference that they can make in 2026. There's a political class out there that gains their power because of cynicism. If they mm-hmm. can just make people cynical, they don't show up to vote, or they just, you know, listen to campaign ads, they benefit. But I feel like with better information, more frequent information, more trusted, more conversational information, we can help people understand that the big story is really the power that they have when they otherwise would feel so helpless.
Hey, and you really focus on the rural parts of Wisconsin and getting the message out to rural folks, which is a different message than people receive in Madison and Milwaukee. But we've always had a rural-urban divide, and you've been hearing more and more about it over the last few years. Do you think it's getting better or getting worse?
I want to believe that it is slowly getting better, because people are understanding that so much of this division isn't real. It's exacerbated mm-hmm. by people who benefit from those differences. I am a city kid. I grew up in St. Paul and then Eau Claire, and I've lived in Milwaukee and I've lived in Madison, but I married a girl who grew up on a dairy farm in, you know, Reidsville, Wisconsin, in Manitowoc County, you know, just south of Green Bay there. And I've had a love affair with rural America and Wisconsin ever since. I was the chair of the Rural Affairs Committee in the state Senate because that's where I wanted my focus to be. But I would all the time be talking to my colleagues in Milwaukee and in other cities, realizing we have so much in common. Mm-hmm. We want our kids to have a good education. We want our taxes to be affordable. We want to have the opportunities that come with job growth. And those things seem to be happening in the suburbs, but they are missing in rural Wisconsin, and they are missing in our larger cities, and that we should not be buying into the rhetoric about an urban-rural divide. So it's there. There's no doubt, because people love to accentuate it and emphasize it. But I feel like there are more people than ever that want us to see the reality of the situation. You know, part of the reason Donald Trump's not having a very good, you know, month is that people are seeing the reality of the economy mm-hmm. compared to the rhetoric. You know, you can fake your way through things like, oh, there's all these transgender athletes every place, but you can't fake the reality of people who are losing their jobs to AI, or who have seen their benefits cut, who have seen their rural hospitals close. And you know, we can help convey that to people, to focus on the big things that matter at home, whether you're in a rural place or an urban place.
I might also add healthcare premiums doubling. People mm-hmm. are really struggling right now. So being able to highlight those things in people's own lives so they can't just say, the economy's great, look at the stock market. Another slogan that you're hearing from the Republican side. It's not a reflection of the actual economy as it affects regular Wisconsinites.
No, they want to know, where's the guy that said he was going to lower prices on day one? Mm-hmm. And instead we're bombing fishing boats in the Caribbean and you know, putting troops on the streets, the kinds of things that people, they were not voting for that. They said, take care of me. And they really don't feel listened to or taken care of right now.
Yeah, they sure don't. I am talking with Pat Kreitlow, my friends. He is the host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on Civic Media and the founding editor of Up North News. He's also a former Wisconsin state senator. You know, we've already kind of dabbled in this, but we can't have this conversation without talking about how people are getting their information about politics. There's so many options with varying levels of truthiness and entertainment, and the landscape is evolving. So we'll get into that coming up next. This is the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with my friend, Pat Kreitlow. He's the host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on Civic Media. He's the founding editor of Up North News, and he's also a former Wisconsin state senator. If you've missed any part of our conversation, and it's a good one, you can always find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you get your podcasts. And check out the show, the video version, on my YouTube channel, at Dr. Kristen Lierley. So, Pat, let's jump back in. This is the meat of it right now. This is the media part of this conversation that we all need to have, because what the heck is happening with media right now? You are one of a handful of voices keeping local, rural media alive in Wisconsin. Newspapers, radio, TV, everything's being bought up by conglomerates, which means that they're pushing out these messages that they want, but we're not getting the information that we need on the ground, the stuff that really matters, like local sports and what's happening in our city councils. How do we change this local media atmosphere so people get the information that they need in order to live their lives?
Yeah, and it's a very tough nut to crack. We've been talking about it, you know, in media circles for the longest time as the internet caught on, and as, you know, news sites had to give everything away to get internet traffic, whereas, you know, we all learned how to pay 99 cents for music and then buy an album and things. News never caught on to that. And so they'd been giving away the product for free. Newspapers couldn't compete. They've been folding up and going out of business. We know all this. How do we come back from it? Really, in baby steps. In much like the first newspapers a long, long time ago were humble little enterprises, so it goes with blogs and with podcasts and with Facebook groups that are covering just local hometowns and school boards. And, you know, the media is more small d democratic than ever before. Unfortunately, with all of those choices, it means that viewers, readers, and listeners have never had to work harder to figure out if the place that they're looking at for information is trustworthy or not. And nobody can do it on their own. They've got to do it with recommendations from friends and neighbors, especially, I would add, people that don't always think like you. Mm-hmm. Like, where does your, you know, Republican friend in this instance, where are they getting their news? And dip into it for a little bit and say, okay, that's an interesting point of view. It's challenging me. Or, oh my gosh, this is garbage. I need to talk to my friend about listening to this radio show over here instead. There is no, you know, single answer or magic wand. It's something we all are going to have to do. And the more people that take the, frankly, the lazy way out and just whatever, you know, looks interesting as they're scrolling, that may or may not be true, is only going to harm them and all of us in the long run. So local coverage is something that's only very slowly going to be taking root in places that aren't already big cities with big media outlets.
When you say the lazy way out, and you're right, I mean, who hasn't sat in bed when they wake up in the morning and doom scrolled for a little while before you go to bed at night? And a lot of these messages we know aren't real or factual or accurate, yet we still consume it. There are a lot of people, you know, I think of health information, of course, because I'm a doctor. There is so much health information out there that people understand is bad for you, yet it's still getting into their brain because of the way it's presented and because of the way that your brain works. So it's not just Walter Cronkite anymore. It's all of these tricky little messages.
It's not Walter Cronkite. It's Joe Rogan. And when I heard last week that Joe Rogan's podcast had surpassed the New York Times Daily podcast as the number one podcast, part of me wanted to just weep because I've really struggled with how people are tuning into somebody who quite often gets things either wrong or finds himself influenced by misinformation. But at the same time, Kristen, I also know that what people are looking for is something that's conversational, something that's well-rounded. Nobody wants an all politics podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, just only the true insiders do. And so that's what they see in a guy like Joe Rogan. But I'm really, really hoping we find other alternatives as well of people that, you know, aren't all work and no play, you know, all politics and no sports or lifestyle features or whatever, but engage in a bit more critical thinking before they swallow hook, line, and sinker the thing that some politician is selling on a bumper sticker.
Well, and we have to go where people are too, because I know we've had this conversation before. To us, news is this thing in our head, and we always have this impulse to kind of return to it, even though we know that it's not there anymore. But when I think about Joe Rogan, and I am not entertained by Joe Rogan's podcast, it does not appeal to me, but many people are. But people don't sit down and like listen to it intently. It's 3 hours long. They're just playing it in the background. So is that where we need to be? Just having, I mean, that's what people used to do with radio. Just think about Rush Limbaugh. They would just have it playing in the background in the garage when they were doing yard work. You know, it was a different time. But
and why did they keep it on? Because it was entertaining to them.
Yeah, yes.
I remember when Rush Limbaugh first came on. And shortly after that in Milwaukee, where we were living at the time while Sherry was going to medical school, was Charlie Sykes and Mark Belling. And I remember at the time thinking, you know, late 80s, early 90s, oh, this is never going to catch on. These people are just, you know, they're not telling the truth. They're insulting. But the thing is, they're also funny at times, even in a cruel way. They were entertaining. They were taking calls so that people could hear from, you know, basically their neighbors on the radio. They'd figured out the formula compared to people that were just doing these stoic newscasts and not, you know, engaging in any kind of conversation whatsoever. It's no wonder they got a foot in the door. And people on the progressive side just kind of surrendered the territory until it was far too late.
I think, too, they offer conflict. And that's something that we really struggle to engage in. I mean, people, especially in rural areas, will dance around each other and walk away and find reasons to not have conversations about politics, sex, religion, all of that stuff, because you know you have to live with the people that you're having a conversation with. There's no just, you know, they have memories. So when you listen to that kind of entertainment that's also confrontational, you can hear that conflict that you know you want to have sometimes with people, but there are no consequences for you.
Right. And then it started with radio callers, but then sadly it spilled over into the comment sections of the internet. And you want to talk about naive. When mm-hmm. we first started the TV station's webpage and there were comment sections below the stories, and I'd see that very first wave of comments, you know, all those years ago. And I said, we can't have this. We have to shut these down. And they're like, you can't. The genie's out of the bottle. The toothpaste is out. The comment sections are here to stay. I'm like, well, then they have to be policed because you can put anything you want on there. And they're like, well, no, you can't. And by surrendering that, by saying, well, there's nothing you can do, now it just allows anything to spill out there. And I'll give you a specific example. At the TV station, a profile piece was done on a high profile individual, one who was very well liked in the community. And there was a comment under there about how he was, you know, having an affair and broke up a marriage or something like that. And I deleted it because I'm like, we don't know that. You can't put stuff there. But what happened the next day? It was right back there. And you could delete it, but it would be back the next day. And so as soon as you open up to endless comments, endless listener phone calls, endless input, you have to understand that you're allowing, again, when I say the small d democratization of the media, it means goofballs, it means bots, it means trolls. And there is no easy answer for how you help everybody wade through all that. So yeah, there's conflict because people have figured out conflict brings eyeballs, conflict brings clicks, and conflict brings you revenue. Mm-hmm. And that is, conflict is the business model of media. So the only way to counter that is to try to engage in things that are as positive and informative, and I guess at the same time, invite a little bit of that conflict in a way that it guides towards something that's fact-based rather than just is the angriest or the loudest argument.
But Pat, that's so boring.
I know, and that's the challenge, isn't it? Is to do all this. And so, for example, on my show, I need people who are going to laugh. So I've got this doctor that I bring on twice a week just for that laugh, who at the same time is actually spitting out the God's honest truth about healthcare and politics and things like that. And we just need more people like that on our radio shows. We need more people starting blogs and podcasts like that and enticing people in where it's not boring. Kristen, nobody's ever used the word boring to talk about you. Ever, 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 ever. Maybe your boys. I don't know.
I think my boys, yeah.
And we just simply need more people who, like you, said, I'm going to get out of my comfort zone. I'm going to go do this thing that's a little bit more public. And you are seeing it. It's just that, you know, we need to encourage more people to start that podcast, to start that Facebook page, to run for local office, whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. Let the good people win by making sure they get engaged and don't just throw their hands up and walk away.
Mm-hmm. And understand what the consequences are and why it's important to get engaged. I think so many people, especially when it comes to voting, they go to the polls and they think about, well, I vote for ours. I just have always voted. I am a Catholic. I've always been a Catholic. I do the Catholic things, even though I don't really do the Catholic things. I am a Republican because I have always done the Republican things. And we've got to break out of that, especially when it comes to like the spring elections in Wisconsin, which are the nonpartisan elections where there's no R or D, and people are choosing people for school board, and they have no idea who these people are or what they bring or what kind of a community foundation they will build.
And because people don't naturally vote in nonpartisan elections, spring local elections, what gets them out is it has to be something compelling. Mm-hmm. And it's often compelling negative, like, you know, so-and-so is going to make sure that there's litter boxes in all the school bathrooms.
Right.
You know, or somebody that is so very good at calling out the kind of BS that we are seeing in politics today. But if, again, that requires people to step up and explain the importance of voting every time. I think we're really learning that in Wisconsin. Look at the results of most of the last state Supreme Court races here. Mm-hmm. Every election matters. And when you take an election off that you look back and go, oh, why didn't I show up for that one? And people are getting the message. You got to show up for every one of them. That's the only way this country is going to work with the kind of small d democratic and media system that we are in now.
Let's go back to media for just a minute. Big question. Is there a sustainable future for local media?
Yes, because there were the town criers who were replaced by the pamphleteers, who were replaced by the newspapers, who were replaced by AM local news, who were replaced by TV. Then it went to, websites and then newsletters and then blogs and now podcasts. And there will be things that we don't know. We have no idea what local communication is going to look like, 10 years from now. But other people will be paying attention to what the next big thing could be. They will engage in it. And so there will always be something. It's just a matter of, do you want to be a part of it to make sure that it's trustworthy and, or at least do what you can to keep those people honest.
To keep having those conversations. I love that you went back to town criers. And I feel right now like you have seen all of that.
I'm not that old. Come on.
Friends, I'm talking with Pat Kreitlow. He is the host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on Civic Media and the founding editor of Up North News. He's also a former Wisconsin state senator. We've talked a lot about heavy stuff. Let's have some fun in our last segment. What do you say? All right. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show, streaming on the Civic Media app and all across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and I'm here with my friend Pat Kreitlow. He is the host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on Civic Media. He's also the founding editor of Up North News and a former Wisconsin state senator. We've talked about media. We've talked about Wisconsin politics. What we haven't done is figured out how are you always so nice and friendly at 6 o'clock in the morning? How do you do that?
Because this is a gig that I feel so fortunate to be able to do. I am a radio kid by nature. It was the thing that I grew up with, listening, as I mentioned, to WCCO radio. But if I were living in Milwaukee, I would have grown up with WTMJ radio. In Chicago, it would have been WGN radio. I've listened to all those stations back in the good old days, as far as I'm concerned, where it was full service broadcasting that was always done with a smile, but you are always well informed, and it's what I always wanted to do. And so I've gotten to do that along with so many other things that I wanted to set for goals in my life. And so now to be able to close it as I began it in radio is just a thrill. I have no problem being up and at 'em and upbeat at 6 in the morning when I'm doing something I've always wanted to do.
How much coffee?
Very little. And keep in mind, I wasn't a coffee drinker until just a few years ago. I was one of those, Mountain Dew drinkers in college who went to Coke and then Diet Coke and then eventually coffee. But there's maybe a half a cup of coffee in me when the show gets started.
Well, I definitely, when I am on your show early in the morning, I have to have the coffee because the mornings are hard for me.
Oh, no, I don't ever have a problem with that. I have more of a problem with people who aren't drinking it at all. For folks that listen to the show, my young producer, Parker Olson, drinks nothing but water, and I'm worried for him. But he's been able to do it so far. He has not fallen, for being as young as he is, he hasn't fallen asleep. He hasn't missed a show at 6 a.m. yet because he's got it going. So, not everybody needs coffee as much as you do.
That is true. Okay, so radio wasn't your only gig. You were an anchorman. So here's my question. When you watch the movie Anchorman, do you feel insulted or inspired?
Have I not told you that movie is largely inspired on my life?
Well, it's clearly inspired with your hair.
That's a part of it. It was set a decade before I became an anchor, so I didn't have the big cheesy mustache, you know. Uh-huh. But by and large, you know, I had many leather-bound books, and I don't know if you know this, but I was kind of a big deal back in the day. And I won't say that I read anything that was in the teleprompter, but we had an anchor who would. And so that was an interesting lesson in paying attention to pre-reading everything. And I do mean, as they say in the movie, everything.
Uh-huh. So that sounds like a story about something wild and unexpected that happened live on the air. I bet you have
there
a favorite
many.
Story.
Yes.
Tell it.
Oh, my goodness. You know, the stories revolved mostly around just all the fun that we had behind the scenes. You know, there were, like, we had a meteorologist. His name was John Jetta. I haven't heard from him in the longest time. But, you know, we had this banter of picking on each other that played over really well, along with my co-anchor, Judy Clark, who is retiring in about another week or two here. And I love her dearly, and I hope she has the greatest retirement ever. I'm not that far behind you, Judy. But, you know, she was the best co-anchor. And we just had a lot of that, you know, chemistry. You can't invent that. Mm-hmm. So many people have tried to invent chemistry on TV or the radio or elsewhere, and you can't. It's either there or it's not. And so there was just a lot of fun stuff behind the scenes. And then there would just be times when you'd have newer reporters doing things, like the time a newer reporter was doing her stand-up after some tornado damage. And as part of her stand-up in her package piece on tape, she picks up a down power line and says, you know, and there were many down power lines like these. And it came back to me, and I was just speechless. I'm not speechless on TV. But I said, and of course, she clearly knew that that was dead, but you would never, ever do something like that, you know. She gave us a couple of interesting stories like that. She once included a cutaway of the Rotary Club putting up some Christmas decorations and purposely kept in a little snippet of a dog peeing on one of the Christmas decorations because she thought that was funny. There were things like that that we had with reporters, because you learn in the business, especially in a small beginner market like Eau Claire. The people who actually want to be broadcast journalists and the people who just want to be on TV. And uh-huh. The people who just want to be on TV, they don't last, because they realize maybe we make it look easy, but it is a little harder than it looks to do the things that we do.
Although maybe that's the thing that's going to draw in more people to watch, is picking up down power lines and doing.
I guess if that's what does it, but, you know, this isn't Fear Factor. We're not trying to electrocute anybody on TV.
Right. So in the couple of minutes that we have left, when you look back on your career, what are you most nostalgic about?
I guess, yeah, just the fortunate circumstances that allowed me to do all of these different things that clearly wasn't, I didn't have any kind of a path. Sherry and I like to say there is no 5-year plan. Mm-hmm. You know, you just never know. I mean, we didn't even get into our 3-year adventure in the Caribbean that just kind of came up. And that was another midlife crisis where we just went there and I ended up being on TV there. The Up North News thing just came by chance of a phone call from somebody. And so you just have to always be open to the possibilities. And if you do that, and if you work hard at the same time, you know, a lot of good things can happen. And that's really my story. I'll be able to look back and go, I worked really hard, but because of it, a lot of good things got to happen.
I really look forward to the possibilities of the months ahead, because I think we're going to have a lot of fun together between now and November and way beyond.
No doubt. Yep. Yes. I agree.
Thank you so much, Pat, for letting me flip the script today. All right. We will catch you on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on Civic Media. Yes. And of course, Up North News. And friends, if you missed any part of our conversation, you can always find it on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, and on my YouTube channel. Thank you so much to Abraham Lyerly, our producer, Nick Tierman, who wrote our music. And we will see you next week on the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.